Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. The National and American Leagues have been facing off in the World Series since 1903, and the leagues completely merged in 1999. But for a short while, there was a third major league, the Federal League, which existed for 2 years before World War I, years that were defined by court battles and acrimony, fierce competition, and ultimately, the Supreme Court ruling that granted baseball the antitrust exemption it still relies upon today. But the Federal League was no fly-by-night upstart. It had the backing of some wealthy owners and attracted many stars who jumped from the established leagues. A century later, the Federal League is a curiosity. It's impossible to even imagine a third league claiming a spot under Bud Selig's umbrella today. Author Daniel Levitt has written extensively about baseball, and his new book is The Battle That Forged Modern Baseball, The Federal League Challenge and Its Legacy. Daniel Levitt, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Where did the idea for the Federal League come from in the first place? What was the genesis, and how did it happen?
Well, ever since the National League started in 1876, for about the 50 years after that, new leagues would come and go. Some would stay around for a while, like the old American Association. But the American League, when it came in 1901, it came and it made itself a major league. It declared itself a major league in competition with the National, and it won its position. It eventually, after 2 years of a hard-fought battle, was sort of granted recognition, if you will, by the National League. But it really forced its way in. And what was happening then from about 1903 going forward for the next few years is that baseball became very prosperous. The American League and the National League, 16 teams you had then, and teams were making a lot of money. Guys who had, you know, some players like Charles Comiskey of the White Sox, he was a player. He ended up owning the White Sox as part of the American League and became very wealthy through that. And he really just started as a ball player. And so there was a lot of people who saw how much money was in baseball, and there was a history of teams succeeding, whether it was the American League that really dug in there and made it forever, or teams like the American Association in the late 19th century that had a pretty good 10-year run. So clearly there was profit to be made in baseball. That's sort of number one. The other thing is there were cities that really felt themselves major league. Baltimore, for instance, which had a National League team in the 1890s and then an American League in 1901, which eventually moved. And they felt themselves a major league city. And they said, we are a major league city. And so you had both wealthy industrialists who saw an opportunity to make money, and then that combined with sort of civic interest in these cities that felt they were a major league city. Kansas City was another one of those.
Now, we tend to think of this era in the 19-teens as being sort of the early baseball time, but, I mean, this is, yes, it's a pre-Ruth time in baseball, so in that sense, it is an early era, but it had been around on a major level, the National League, almost 40 years by then. So was the AL-NL alliance particularly threatened when the Federal League came in? Did the Federal League owners see an opportunity because of a weakness on the part of the established leagues?
I don't think they saw a weakness. One of the things that helped the AL get started, which is an interesting question, because in 1901, the National League was sort of in disarray. They had owners fighting among themselves. They had contracted in 1900, so there were only eight teams. You had the case of both, there was a lot of cities that thought they could support Major League Baseball, and then you had an ownership that was just, there was like four owners fighting each other over how the league should be run. That didn't really exist in 1914 when the Federal League came on. The American League in particular was extremely well organized. Ben Johnson, who was the league president, very much ran the league as a sort of an enlightened despot, if you will, and many of the owners felt beholden to him for having gotten them into their positions in the first place. The National League was always a little more disorganized. The owners were always a little bit more fractionalized, but even so, they were still, you know, they were in no way as disorganized as they had been before. So the Federal League owners, and I don't think they quite realized that they were going to run into such a strongly organized opposition.
How much of this comes down to perception? Because it seems you can just say this is a major league, but if you don't get the fans and the reporters and the talent to buy into it, that's sort of an empty claim.
Well, absolutely. Perception is a huge piece of it. And I think that, you know, at least the Federal League was clearly perceived as a major league. Now, they never really got the stars they went after, the Ty Cobbs and the Christy Mathewsons, who they offered huge contracts to. But they got a number of major league players. And certainly the press treated them as a major league generally. And they were generally, and the fans certainly felt they were a major league. I mean, in Baltimore, for example, one of the great stories, there was an exhibition game where Baltimore also had what was then Double A, which was the highest minor league. And Baltimore's opening day drew about 25,000 fans, which was a huge draw for the day, whereas across the street, the Baltimore high minor league team, which had been a staple in that city for the last 10 to 15 years, drew basically 100 fans for a game, an exhibition against the New York Giants, who were then probably the premier franchise in baseball. And there's a number of times, for example, in Baltimore in particular, where there'd be a Federal League game that would draw 6,000 people, where the Double A game would draw 600. So clearly in those cities, Kansas City and Indianapolis were similar, but not quite to the same degree. So clearly the fans in those cities felt like they were now major league.
To what extent did the Federal League's ascension force the AL and NL to become better partners with each other?
That's a good question, because it did force them to be closer to each other, because what had happened is that the leagues never liked each other. Ben Johnson always hated the NL and felt like, you know, these guys never really gave us a chance. And the NL always sort of viewed the AL as the upstart league. But once they had this, it did unite them in opposition to the Federal League. And a lot of this is, well, you could see through sort of joint actions they took, the blacklist, and that was probably the main thing that hindered the Federal League in getting players, is that the two leagues jointly sort of said, any player that ever plays for the Federal League will never again play in either of our leagues, in Major League Baseball. And, you know, that's a huge detriment to any player who's going to jump, because that's their livelihood. And so there was a lot of sort of joint declarations of that sort that you probably wouldn't have gotten earlier, sort of joint support of the minor leagues. The minor leagues were hurt dramatically. There was probably, you know, 40 minor leagues in 1913, and there was probably 20 at the beginning of the 1916 season. So the joint support and funding of the minor leagues. So, yes, absolutely, it forced them to work together, whereas before they'd been sort of a cold truce that had to become a working relationship.
This all happened in the span of only a couple of years. I mean, it's a very accelerated clock for the founding of a league, many cities signing on, owners getting players, and then everything crumbling. At what point did that optimism change over to being more realistic about the state of the Federal League?
I think sort of July 1915 was sort of when everybody really realized it. The ownership of the Federal League, so the Federal League sort of declared itself major for 1914, And I think one of the things that they didn't quite understand is, you know, the American League 15 years before or 12 years before, they put their stake in the ground in 1901. And by the middle of 1902, it was pretty clear that they were going to succeed. So I think the Federal League owners had a little bit of a short-term expectation, the sense that, you know, in 1 or 2 years, we're going to be able to make it. And I think there was a sense that the American and National League would accept them as equals. I think they were a little bit naive in how fierce the opposition was. So after the 1914 season, there was a lot of backroom negotiations where the Federal League owners were trying to get their league accepted more and hope that they would get accepted as a major league. And interestingly, some of the owners in the Federal League were working to get major league franchises and maybe leaving the others in the lurch. That never came to happen. And by July of 1915, many of the Federal League owners were sort of having clandestine meetings with American and National League owners on sort of how can we get out of this. The other key thing that happened was October 1915, Robert Ward, who owned Tip Top Bread and was probably the angel for a number of teams. He probably supported about 4 or 5 teams. He owned the Brooklyn team and was probably as wealthy as any major league owner. He was a very wealthy man, one of the first guys to introduce bread manufacturing to America in terms of the industrial process to manufacture bread. And he died in October of 1915. And that really took the starch out of the league. If he hadn't died, they may have been able to survive another year. But at that point, they really didn't have a champion who had money.
In the long run, this almost worked out exceedingly well for Major League Baseball, in that the famous court case has set the path for the way the Major Leagues has operated almost ever since. If this had happened in a different court, if the challenge came later, who knows what happens with the future of baseball. So what do you see as the legacy for the Federal League?
Well, absolutely. I think it sort of cemented, or, you know, the status quo. or ossified it, if you want to look at it that way. I mean, up until 1914 and 1915, you had seen a lot of changes. You had seen new leagues come and challenge every about 10 or 15 years. You had seen some succeed. You had seen sort of conversations over how ownership ought to work. You know, in the late 19th century, the reserve clause that limited player mobility came in. At one point, the National League tried to do a syndicate ownership where basically the league would own all the teams rather than have individual owners. So there was a lot of sort of flux as to how sport, you know, and particularly baseball, was going to develop. And I think that the end of the Federal League really sort of set that in stone. After 1915, baseball was going to go on its way. It had this antitrust exemption, so essentially the owners could do as they pleased. You know, the kind of stuff that would have been different. I think you would have seen free agency a lot sooner had this antitrust decision not gone the way it had. You certainly would have seen expansion earlier. I mean, cities like Baltimore and Kansas City and Atlanta, I mean, teams were clamoring for teams. They would have gotten teams earlier had not Major League Baseball had this, both the legal antitrust exemption and then sort of this sense that they were invulnerable. And in fact, they probably were to any real competition.
And as I understand it, the stats do count in the history of baseball in that big book, wherever it is. The Federal League was right. A major league, right?
Absolutely, yes. They do. If you go to any of the, you know, major baseball encyclopedias, it'll have the Federal League stats in players' totals. You know, and in reality, it was probably 90% as good as the major leagues. I mean, it was clearly a competitive league, but they also had a lot of minor leaguers as well who starred in the league.
We've been speaking with Daniel Levitt. He's the author of The Battle That Forged Modern Baseball, The Federal League Challenge and Its Legacy. It's been a pleasure to have you on the roundtable. Thanks so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.